By 1971, the United States' determination to seduce Indonesia away from communism was heightened because the outcome of the Vietnam War was looking very uncertain. President Nixon had begun a series of troop withdrawals in the summer of 1969, and U.S. strategy was taking on a more global perspective. The strategy focused on preventing a domino effect of one country after another falling under communist rule, and it focused on a couple of countries. Indonesia was the key. Maine's electrification project was part of a comprehensive plan to ensure American dominance in Southeast Asia. The premise of U.S. foreign policy was that Suharto would serve Washington in a manner similar to the Shah of Iran. The United States also hoped the nation would serve as a model for other countries in the region. Washington based part of its strategy on the assumption that gains made in Indonesia might have positive repercussions throughout the Islamic world, particularly in the explosive Middle East. And if that were not incentive enough, Indonesia had oil. No one was certain about the magnitude or quality of its reserves, but oil company seismologists were exuberant over the possibilities. As I pored over the books at the BPL, my excitement grew. I began to imagine the adventures ahead. In working for Maine, I would be trading the rugged Peace Corps lifestyle for a much more luxurious and glamorous one. My time with Claudine already represented the realization of one of my fantasies. It seemed too good to be true. I felt at least partially vindicated for serving the sentence at that all-boys prep school. Something else was also happening in my life. Anne and I were not getting along. I think she must have sensed that I was leading two lives. I justified it as the logical result of the resentment I felt toward her for forcing us to get married in the first place. Never mind that she had nurtured and supported me through the challenges of our Peace Corps assignment in Ecuador. I still saw her as a continuation of my pattern of giving in to my parents' whims. Of course, as I look back on it, I'm sure my relationship with Claudine was a major factor. I could not tell Anne about this, but she sensed it. In any case, we decided to move into separate apartments. One day in 1971, about a week before my scheduled departure for Indonesia, I arrived at Claudine's place to find the small dining room table set with an assortment of cheeses and breads, and there was a fine bottle of Beaujolais. She toasted me. "You've made it." She smiled, but somehow it seemed less than sincere. "You're now one of us." We chatted casually for half an hour or so. Then, as we were finishing off the wine, she gave me a look unlike any I had seen before. "Never admit to anyone about our meetings," she said in a stern voice. "I won't forgive you if you do, ever, and I'll deny I ever met you." She glared at me, perhaps the only time I felt threatened by her, and then gave a cold laugh. "Talking about us would make life dangerous for you." I was stunned. I felt terrible. But later, as I walked alone back to the Prudential Center, I had to admit to the cleverness of the scheme. The fact is that all our time together had been spent in her apartment. There was not a trace of evidence about our relationship, and no one at Maine was implicated in any way. There was also part of me that appreciated her honesty. She had not deceived me the way my parents had about Tilton and Middlebury.